Mozambique was Frontline Fellowship's very first mission field, and Mozambique has changed a lot to get an appreciation of the answered prayers and the wonderful work that's able to be done in Mozambique today. One's got to understand where it's come from. And our mission grew out of a prayer fellowship of soldiers in the South African Army. And the first mission field God put before us was Mozambique, the old Portuguese East Africa. And when I came back from my first mission to Mozambique in April 1982, my pastor, Reverend Doc Watson, challenged me, many missionaries tell of what they've done. I would like to know what you've learned. And that challenge has continued to inspire me to look deeper, to discover what God is saying in and through the many obstacles and frustrations and conflicts and through every country that I've had the privilege of ministering in. It also led me to ask many questions. I filled up many notebooks, interviewing missionaries and pastors and refugees, chaplains and evangelists, teachers and survivors of atrocities, prisoners, soldiers, policemen, and even several heads of state. The words of my first high school history teacher, Mr. Rhys Davies, who was also a member of Parliament in Rhodesia, has frequently echoed my mind. Always ask why. What is the context? Do not accept the official narrative. Beware the victor's version. Wartime propaganda often morphs into peacetime textbooks. Learn to think critically. Think outside the box. Dig deeper. You will not find the truth by accepting the standard narrative parroted in the news media or on the screens or in the school textbooks out there. Another very good piece of advice was received after one of my early missions to Mozambique. After missions report back at a church in Transvaal, in Randburg actually, one of the people, never saw him before since, said to me at the door, "What you've got to say is very hard to believe. Next time take pictures." And that was great advice. I had not bothered to take a camera, let alone any pictures, on my first mission to Mozambique. We've got some artwork for that. I was so focused on the work to be done, but what he said made sense. Why should people believe in what we were saying? How much more convincing to show them photographic proof? It's one thing to tell people that churches are being destroyed by communists or jihadists and Bibles burned. It's another thing to document it with photographic evidence and eyewitness testimonies, and if at all possible, with dates and names and places. And there's no need to reinvent the wheel. If a good resource already exists, use it. From the first mission, God guided me to network and learn from those who had already been in the field, to use those resources already available. So in the first days of Frontline Fellowship, World Missionary Press Gospel Booklets, WMPs, became a vital part of every outreach. WMP produces 50-page gospel booklets in over 300 languages. And gospel recordings, Bible media, you see some of those in the glass cabinet here, provide us with many thousands of gospel records, card talks, gospel messages, tapes, flip charts, audio Bibles in more than 100 languages. We've used these to reach the illiterate in the marketplaces, beer halls, prisons, hospitals, military bases, refugee camps, on the streets and hut to hut. Francis Grimm, the founder of the first mission I had the privilege of serving, Hospital Christian Fellowship, he taught me to pray intensively in hours of prayer every morning, days of prayer, nights of prayer at Hospital Christian Fellowship headquarters in Kempton Park. He taught me to pray through Operation World, country by country, in strategic prayer focus. Well, Patrick Johnson, the author, the founder of Operation World, his intercessory handbooks guided our mission, in fact started our mission really, because by praying through Operation World, I learned that Mozambique was the least evangelized country in the Southern Hemisphere. There wasn't one Bible for 1,000 people. No missionaries allowed in the church in Mozambique. 1980 edition of Operation World informed us that there were only two doctors in the country, medical doctors. That the country had no missionaries, and nobody under 18 was allowed in churches, nobody under 18 could be baptized. Bibles were banned. Well, Patrick Johnson and I became correspondents, and I became a field researcher for future editions of Operation Bull, and Patrick Johnson continues to be an honored member of the board of Frontline Fellowship. And his prayer map, one of the best guides out there, all the books he's done, guiding us to the battle for the heart of Africa. The green represents where Muslims are the majority, blue where witchcraft is the majority, yellow where Christianity officially is the majority. Lift up your eyes, look at the fields, for they are already ripe for harvest. Nothing is impossible. Nothing is beyond the reach of prayer except that which is beyond the will of God. No one is unreachable. The will of God will never lead you, where the grace of God cannot keep you. So these are our mission fields, from Angola through Zambia and Zimbabwe to Mozambique, the frontline states. Well, when people heard going to Mozambique, it's, oh, prawns, LM, coconuts, bananas, palm trees, beaches, holidays. Well, I never saw that side of Mozambique. And what I saw was something very different. Mozambique used to be a tourist attraction. Rhodesians and South Africans poured into Mozambique, which is part of the Portuguese Empire. In fact, it was 500-year-old empire, and it was known as Portuguese East Africa. And Mozambique was a real tourist attraction. In fact, the city was very modern. The military there looked very professional, very neat, very efficient. It's kind of another world when you look back at what it was like in the 60s and 70s. And the Portuguese treated Mozambique as an overseas province. And they were smart, efficient, capable. And there was a serious war going on. And everything from cavalry to jet fighters, helicopters. On the other side, you had the guerrillas, the terrorists, the freedom fighters, whichever you wanted to call them. But they planted landmines. This is what the city looked like. That's what used to be where the ugly Samora Machel statue is these days. Palana Hotel. I mean, again, people just think, this is a tourist attraction. Well, that's what they saw. I didn't see that. No picture of our early cross-border missions, but this is artistic depictions of some of our early artistic frontline people as to how they saw our cross-border Mozambique. Well, I can show you they didn't have a nice building like that, nor were the glasses in the windows. But anyway, on the way to Maputo on another mission later on. And Maputo was a city that did not have power failures. They occasionally had electricity. Lots of communist graffiti. This is the university, Eduardo Mondlane, Marxist University, could tell what was the major. And by the way, just to show you how change isn't necessarily progress, this is what Beira looked like back in the evil days of colonialism, and that's what the same place looked like under liberation a few years later. Can you see the small trees there? Just look, you can see the same trees later. But there's a few things that have changed. Here's the Grand Hotel in Beira. Not so grand a few years later. Liberation can do this for you. And who's responsible? Well, Samora Machel. A Marxist who turned the country into a hellhole. And this is how a Mozambican depicted it. This, in fact, depicts what he did to the country very well. Concentration camps, massacres, broken infrastructure. This bridge was out, no signs. A developing world. I don't know what was developing except weeds and rust. Because the thousands of kilometers of road and railway just turned into nothing. The towns were socialized, the factories were nationalized. Landmines became the national plant. Missionaries had to design new kinds of bicycles, tricycles actually, that were hand-pedaled for people who'd lost both feet to landmines. We saw the ships, Soviet ships coming in, bringing weapons, offloading tanks, trucks, helicopter gunships and so on, going out, still heavy. What were they taking out? Food. They were taking food out of Mozambique while the people were starving in a green country, which used to export food. People starving. These two children, our team gave vitamin-enriched milk to. It was too late. They died within a week. When you see this sort of thing with skulls and bones broken up around a fire, you know cannibalism is actually back. Churches. 8,000 churches confiscated, closed down, destroyed. Burning of villages. I documented the massacres in the Mozambique report, which later was republished as In the Killing Fields of Mozambique. This was read into the Congressional Record by Senator Jesse Holm, sent Foreign Relations Committee, led to America stopping the aid to Mozambique. Norway government also translated it and broadcast it, and it was read into the Parliament in Norway, and they stopped the aid to Mozambique as a result of this. And as a result, I got a letter from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Department of Cults, Ministry of Religious Affairs, on a letterhead, you come back to Mozambique, we'll kill you. Signed, on a letterhead, from Ministry of Justice. This is Zhao, one of our early field workers. He had been trained in Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow, basically a university for terrorists, and he was a Frelimo guerrilla. before he was converted to Christ and became an evangelist. Zimbabwe soldiers in the Barra corridor near Chimoyo, helping to commit many of the atrocities. Some of the resistance fighters, Renamo, many of them without shoes, some of them without weapons. Even women fighting against Filima. This man, Edwana Malani, was a Filima officer, and he was converted to Christ, and he said, "We've only swapped the Portuguese for the Russians. Colonialism with communism, and the Russians are worse." And so he joined the resistance and was fighting against Filimo, who he had once served. 12.7 anti-aircraft gun. Children in church, even though no children were allowed in church at that time. We're talking about 1982 here. People being sent off to the sugarcane plantations of Cuba, conscripted, no choice, indentured labor, slavery. Converts coming to Christ in Zambezia province, witchcraft elements. The schools had no textbooks. They had no pens, papers, desks. All they had was chalkboard and chalk, and we took the chalk in. You could go into the average village, 60-70% children, maybe 10% old men, and 30% women. Where the men? Men being conscripted into Renamo or Filima, or killed, or shipped off to the working sugarcane plantations of Cuba. Well, Anne put together this cartoon set to give a bit of an idea of what's in a field trip. Months of preparation, thousands of kilometers travel. By the way, that's our motorbike back in the dust back there. Punctures, sleepless nights with friendly mosquitoes, many roadblocks, scenic routes, a warm welcome from the locals, interesting accommodation. By the way, at one point when I was captured in Zambia back in 1987, and I was complaining about the disgusting conditions we were in, and somebody brought up this very newsletter and showed this. But your own newsletter says that you have interesting accommodation. They're all laughing about this. This is during an interrogation. So we realized they actually had a lot of our literature on stock there. A close-up view of wildlife. Evangelistic opportunities. This was inspired by my first Russian evangelism. I had a whole lot of Russian New Testaments. You can see some in the cabinet there, given by Slavic Gospel Association. We went down to Maputo Harbor State, handing out these New Testaments. And I'd hand out five, and I thought, gee, I'm doing well. This is really great. This is easier than I thought. And I was feeling a surge of excitement at this first attempt at Russian evangelism, and I heard a bellow from some big Russian seaman. And this man barreled down on top of me, picked me over his head, and threw me into the harbor. And while I'm floundering in the oily, filthy, messy, pollution-ridden, litter-strewn harbor, trying to find some ladder that I could climb out, I was plop, 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 my New Testament's landing around me. So not a very effective first attempt at evangelizing Russians. But that got Anne so amused that she produced this evangelistic opportunities. But the results make it all worthwhile. And then again, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. This is a real ongoing joke in early frontline. It should be, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And the picture here is a missionary in a cooking pot. And So people back home made jokes about these sort of things. Other artwork made a bit later on, also by Anne. And more recently, Justin, our typesetter, did this cartoon to give an idea of celebrating 40 years in the front line. So artwork's often been part of our work because you can't always take a picture of some of the most interesting things that take place. One of the earliest leaflets of our mission across the borders. And we produced all kinds of tracts. This is our early artwork, being able to communicate what we were learning across the border. And our first board member was Father Arthur Lewis, the man who published Christian Terror, which we've republished, showing how the World Council Church has helped the very terrorists like Filima and Zani and Zapu, who are murdering Christians and burning churches. Churches and the World Council Church is giving money to terrorists who are murdering Christians. And this is artwork we got done to depict what was going on in our country as well. Well, back in 1989, I and six medical missionaries from America were captured and taken by Russians in Mi-8 helicopters to Maputo. We were all the way from Zambezia province in north through Tet province interrogated each different place and ended up in Mashava Security Prison in Maputo, and that's the whole story. At one point we were flown by Antonov 26 Soviet aircraft through to Maputo, where we were thrown into the Mashava Security Prison. This picture was taken when George and I were finally released, and we flew to Nelspruit Airport to get out of the country quickly. That's the whole story. Well, Samora Machel declared war on God. He stood up in a stadium and he said, I'm going to prove to you God does not exist. This is in October 1986. Samora Machel cursed God, blasphemed the name of Jesus, and said, I challenge you, God, I dare you, strike me dead. If you don't strike me dead in 60 seconds, everyone will know that you have no power. And he counts off seconds dramatically, 60, 50, 40. In the end, time's up, God. God is dead. I'm alive. And the people had to clap. Well, they had to. I mean, one party dictatorship. About 40 days later, his Soviet Antonov aircraft, which was specially provided by the Russians as a presidential jet, crashed into the Eastern Transvaal. And they misread a whole lot of things. And strewed across the landscape, these are some pictures taken of the crash. And today there is a shrine, that's termed a shrine built there, dedicated by none other than Nelson Mandela to the memory of Nelson, of Samora Machel. By the way, Nelson Mandela married Samora Machel's widow. And her third marriage, his third marriage too. And these are some of the Soviet-made aircraft still there, which I saw walking around, not too far from Back to the Bible Mission, and it's in Mpumalanga. And here's the shrine. This is the main point of impact. And it was, they hit the ground at about 860 kilometers an hour. It was a controlled descent into ground. They just literally plowed into the ground. They misjudged. And these weird poles, they make an eerie sound like ghostly noises the whole time, because as the wind blows from whatever direction, it gives us all type of, and it's one pole for each one of the people on board who was killed, which is most of his Politburo. And it actually says here in this shrine, and they've made all the artwork out of debris from the aircraft. Well, one of our people put out a poster with this aircraft on it, saying, with a picture of Gorbachev, who was premier at that stage, and saying, would you buy a used aircraft from this man? And try to give the impression that the Russians are giving inferior aircraft to Mozambique, which actually wasn't true, because it was a very good aircraft. Nothing wrong with the aircraft. It was caused by, the accident was caused by vodka, and the black box makes it quite clear the chaps were drunk, and they were talking about bars and all that. And continually in the background you hear navigators saying, ground warning, and they're tapping the machine. No, there should be no ground here. You know, they thought they were at sea level, meanwhile they're flying into a mountain. So that's a whole another story about how Samora Machel was judged. He challenged God. Foolish. God's patience. He gives us much more than 60 seconds to repent. But on board the plane was the documents of a meeting between Samora Machel, Kenneth Govinda, and Mugabe, Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, how to overthrow Malawi. And we copied it. We got it translated from the Portuguese into English, and United Christian Action distributed it worldwide, and it helped to really save Malawi from the Marxist plans to overthrow what was then a Christian country. Well, all this and much more is in the Killing Fields of Mozambique book. But Joshua 23 verse 14 says, you know in all your hearts and all your souls that not one thing has failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spoke concerning you. All have come to pass. For you, not one word of them has failed. And I think the evidence of that is what you're going to hear now tonight, because Isaac has been living in Mozambique for 24 years and his family's been working there for more than two decades, and work that we would never thought possible. I never dreamed that Mozambique could be a country where missionaries could be based and worked in my lifetime, that churches could be built, Christian schools could be built, Bibles could be bought in freely. The answers to prayer are extraordinary, because when I left Mozambique, it did not seem like it could ever be a tourist attraction or anything like that. We were praying for God to judge the wicked, to bring freedom, but I must say, even as we prayed it, we didn't quite believe it would happen.